It's for yeast recovery. Don't worry, we had an open fermenter at Omegang also.
I almost passed out. I stuck my head over the counter.
Omegang, let's get this going. Omegang, let's go. Omegang, come on.
There we go. Part number two of what it will be officially known as episode number 7 of Agricultural Acts. We are back here fireside at Indian Ladder Farm Cidery and Brewery, 342 Altamont Road in Altamont, New York. ILFCB.com is their website. Yeah, you're 7 episodes deep now. You know you need to know more about this place. That is one of our special guests, Jeff, cracking open another one of his beers. Adam Farm and Fermentation. This is going to be a spot happening out in Peter Fonda, New York.
Which is right near Jane Fonda.
We're very excited.
They're actually next door.
That's the bitchy, whiny side.
Very excited to have you, Jeff, and Chris back for part two. We barely touched the tip of the iceberg when it comes to wild fermentation and part number one.
We just started touching the tip.
And episode one, we started off by having one of your Creek beers, this incredible cherry. There's no gummy bears in this thing whatsoever. And so what are you pouring for us now, Jeff?
So this is our spontaneous. It was really our first...
thank you.
Our first true batches of spontaneous that we brewed in Colorado before we packed up and moved here. So we actually never even got to release this beer. And probably sadly, we will never get to release this beer due to laws and, you know, all the things that go in the fact that we made it in Colorado and now we're here in New York. So we just have about 75 cases of this that we'll have to share with friends.
And it's called Spontaneous.
So it's, it has no name because we didn't get around to that yet, but it's Spontaneous is because of, as we started to briefly touch on in the first episode, the way we made it with the cool ship and not pitching yeast and all of that. So so we just call it our Spontaneous right now because we didn't get around to naming it. So.
Well, you could read the newspaper through this beer and it smells and tastes amazing.
This one is special, though, and he'll get into why it is pretty special. But most spontaneous beers, as Scott was saying, you blend barrels. You put your batches into barrels, and you get different characteristics out of them. And you might take 10% from one barrel, 50% from another barrel, you know, 25%, and you blend them into one batch. And that's typically how it goes, and you make one batch of beer. And we were tasting all of our different barrels, and we were figuring it out. And this particular one, we had one barrel, and that one barrel was so delicious that we decided that we weren't going to blend it at all. We just took all of the beer from one barrel and just left it. And we did not blend this at all. And so that's why I think this one is quite special. We did make a blended batch of Spontaneous. But this one, to me, I thought was very special because it was just one barrel, no blending, just kept it the way it is.
That's a rare occurrence when it comes to the Spontaneous beer world, that you can have a single barrel that is good enough to stand on its own.
It's really great.
Yeah, this is phenomenal.
Some giggle in there, and while you were giggling, you were holding up your glasses next to each other.
Jeff
so
and I were comparing. It's the same beer.
It's the same beer out of the same bottle.
First pour and last pour.
Pour and last pour. Scott's, you can basically see right through it. It almost is like champagne.
Champagne.
I look through yours, Jeff, and it's almost like a really super hazy IPA look. And I'm just talking about looks now, appearances.
Yeah,
right.
So yeah, this is kind of like the money shot of the spontaneous. So even though there's no yeast or anything that was pitched in this, there's still yeast in it. And as these bottles, when you package them, they're packaged what's considered to be, you know, natural carbonation or bottle condition. There's a number of different terms. So they're, when you put them in the bottle, they're uncarbonated. But what you do is you add some sort of sugar source. It could be fresh wort from another batch you just brewed. It could be honey. It could be sugar. It could be, but some sort of sugar source. Put it in the bottle, and you seal it up. Our bottles happen to be corked and caged, and the wild yeast that is still in suspension in the beer will start to eat that sugar. And when it off gases, it has nowhere to go, so it goes back into the solution, and that's how you carbonate it. So over a period of time, all of that, the dead yeast and any, you know, any proteins or anything that might still be in there all settle to the bottom. So as you're pouring these, and you know, if we wanted to get all nerdy about this, we should have had a basket.
Yeah, you should have had the basket. Things. I'm a big basket.
What are you talking about, basket?
It's literally just like a little basket that you put your 750 in, and it holds it. It's like at that type of angle, and just use the basket to pour that.
So that everything that's in my glass right now would normally be caught in the bottom corner of the bottle, so that we all would have had crystal clear pours. So really, just, you know, from constantly tilting the bottle back and forth, pouring everybody's glass, I was stirring up the sediment and the yeast that was left in the bottom of the bottle.
I see.
So I took the bottom pour of it, which is, this is all just yeast and suspension.
This is why I love agricultural acts, because we learn these things. So what appeared to be you being a gentleman and pouring into everyone else's glass first was actually you just being selfish and getting the money shot.
Yes, exactly.
I love it. Exactly. But now we all know that.
That's the best part. He wants his B vitamins, his potassium. He's not going to have a hangover tomorrow.
Right.
But we can...
Mr. Clear Beer over there, Jeff.
I see where I stand here.
Not to mention the amazing beer farts that this is going to show.
Good.
I'm a lucky girl.
There'll be covers flapping tonight.
Remember when I offered a cot in our hotel room? That's off. That offer is off the table.
This was, again, it was, we touched on the spontaneous process earlier, or in the last episode. So this sat in barrels for about 14 months, maybe?
A little bit longer.
Yeah, a little bit over 14 months. And then just straight into the bottle, you know.
Now, as a consumer, I never know how I should be handling my beer. I just learned that about, what'd you say, a 75? What was the angle that I want to keep bottle like this at, or the basket that holds it? No, but the basket holds it.
25.4 ounces for
you. The basket holds it at what angle so that it...
It's all about the yaw.
Like that?
Okay, all right. Whatever that is, it's 40 degrees.
Who can't see the video, he's holding it on his side.
Yeah, it's base, almost. True. Almost. Because I know that so much hard work and effort goes into this, and it should be enjoyed in the proper way, but it's kind of maddening as a 2-year-old, well, 21-year-old will go in this, because I'm buying alcohol. It's maddening to try and understand exactly how I should be treating the product from where I get it. And even if I got it off of the store shelves handled properly, was it at the right temperature? Was it the correct sunlight? Right. All of that kind of stuff. Right. Because it makes a difference.
Oh, absolutely. And I think a lot of breweries that kind of focus on these types of beers, they start getting in. If you look in the side, and I know I'll explain this. So on the side of our bottle, we actually put a picture of a glass, and this is like the recommended glass that you should drink this in.
I love that. Thank you.
And a lot of breweries are also starting to put
temperature on there.
I don't on these, but they...
Yet.
Yeah. But a lot of breweries are starting to put like recommended temperatures that you should drink it at, and you know, all of those types of things. So they're kind of moving away from, I think some breweries are starting to move away from putting a bunch of stuff on here about, you know, how it was made and the characters and all that stuff, because nobody ever reads it anyway.
I disagree with
that. Or they read it and they go, I didn't taste any of that shit, so.
There is that.
What you hear back from them, right? Like, what are you talking about?
Passion
right.
fruit. Uh-huh. I've never had passion fruit, but that doesn't taste like passion fruit.
So then you get, then you get pounded on, Untapped because you said it tasted like, apricots and this and that and whatnot, and they sit there and bitch and complain that didn't taste any of it.
Well, Pilsner's awful dark.
Right. This beer sucks. I hate mixed cultures anyway.
So maybe not those suggestions of what you should taste, because that could be a train wreck. But I really would appreciate the kind of vessel that I want to be drinking it out of. The temperature, it should be kept at. I'm sick of reading. I know that pregnant women shouldn't be drinking. There's not enough to read on the side of a label.
Right. See, we usually put pregnant women should drink it. We're just, we're bucking the system.
You got all the room on here. There's beautiful art usually, but a little education be okay.
Yeah,
it's such a bummer you can't
can't operate heavy machinery. You read that.
Yeah, I mean, we're really just kind of focusing on, you know, simplicity, right? We start putting basic how it was made and some basic recommendations to try and help you, you know, enjoy the beer a little bit better. The type of glass, maybe the type of temperature, those types of things.
I think optimal temperature is an important
thing. Yeah, absolutely.
It's an important thing. I mean, you know, if you're drinking just a lager, and even with a lager, if Scott could stop doing that.
Well, you were in the mirror fixing your hair for the podcast, so I think Scott's just making sure. Dieter, back to temperature, because you're red hot, baby.
Where was I?
Temp,
where are we now?
Well, it's just important.
Wait, did you hear that? I made Chris snort.
That's the first snort.
It's just enjoying the beer the best way it can be.
By the end of this, I can get somebody to blow a little beer out of their nose. This is a good podcast. Yeah. Oh, right. I'm at a proper temperature. No. So when you're drinking a lager beer, you want it to be fairly cold because, you know, it's not, there's not a lot of going on there, right? But even with a lager beer, when they get warmer, you start tasting more of the hop character, more of the malt character. With this kind of beer, the brewer knows what the optimal temperature is. Yes, you don't want to, like, all of a sudden serve it at that, right? I like when you drink a beer and you go through the whole temperature phase, right? Yeah. And you hit that kind of optimal temperature yourself. And you go, oh, yeah, that is where it should be. But you're obviously not going to just pound a 750 because it's supposed to be at this temperature, right? So you're going to go through all of those temperature phases, and I like that, you know?
Yeah. It's a good, I mean, that's a...
It's like the different seasons of a beer, kind of.
Absolutely, you know? Absolutely.
You don't want to live in Phoenix.
Yeah.
Have the like same weather every single day.
You're right. I don't want to live in Phoenix.
Yeah, I mean, this was actually probably too cold for what we just drank. We probably should have let it warm up for, like, you know, the end of the episode or episode
three
or the blooper reel or whatever.
The blooper bottle that's on the mantle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, this was actually probably too cold for what this was, you know, for what
still
we,
delicious, though, man.
So,
still
thanks.
Delicious.
It is.
Thanks.
That is thanks. Really delicious. Yeah. We're looking forward to having Adam Farm and Fermentation open out there in Fonda. And because clearly you two know what you're doing.
Is that near Bridget Fonda?
Hey, you guys are a huge asset to New York and you don't even know it. Like,
these huge asses that moved to New York.
See, and so that's a, you know, it's not just, you know, it's not just spontaneous beers that have that problem, right? I mean, it's basically any bottle conditioned beer. We run into the same issue with there being yeast in the bottom of the bottle and things like that. You know, I mean, so for those of you out there that can't see this, Chris,
Alex, grab a falcon real quick.
Yeah, I mean, Christopher.
It's not Chris. I'm Chris.
Yeah.
Alex,
yeah.
Said
so,
Chris, I said
no, I was just saying.
Well, who we've got here? We got Dieter. We got Scott. We got Jeff. We got Chris. We got Alex.
Right. Chris,
I'm Jeff, number two,
and Juan Valdez,
executive producer Juan Valdez.
So, but yeah, I mean, he just poured the last little dregs that were in the bottle of Arlo that we had earlier, and I mean, it was just straight sludge. I mean, that's just all yeast. I mean, so that's just it's a common thing with any bottle conditioned beer.
To be safe here, it is a two-bedroom apartment. So.
Right, that's true.
You know, he's not sleeping with Megan tonight.
I feel like 5 years ago, too, people were taking cans of IPA. Like, what was it? Hetty Topper. People were trying to steal the Conan yeast off of Hetty Topper and taking the cans and trying to, like, propagate that yeast that just...
Oh, yeah.
That little worm that came off the bottom of the can, and people were just trying to capture that.
Oh, yeah, I mean, homebrewers have been doing things that forever.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, I used to do that.
You know, but that's the essence of what's in the bottom of that bottle. It's sure. Like, there's a huge...
How many times did you try to culture that dead dual yeast?
No, I didn't have to do that. I would actually call Chris over at White Labs.
hold on. I want to talk about the phenomenon known as Hetty Topper real quick.
Yeah. Okay.
So
from Vermont.
But it's just
the track.
No. I think we're all on a similar track here. Like, was it just because someone cool said it was cool, or is it really that goddamn good of a beer?
No, it's absolutely delicious. It was one of the original New England IPAs.
It was?
Yep.
Okay.
And it kind of brought people to your wonderful state of Vermont all the time in search of this elusive beer.
It was a because groundbreaking thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it was something that was new and exciting. You could only get, at that point, you could only get it in Waterbury,
right,
where now Prohibition Pig is.
Yeah.
And then they opened up the cannery, which is right next to Ben and Jerry's, and they would have like a can release like on a Friday, and it was hilarious. When you go in there wouldn't be a huge line, which was really strange, but people would walk out of there with four or five cases, and you're watching the dudes pack it up right then and there, and they never filled up their pallet. The people in the store would be like, okay, I need four cases. Well, there you go, do this. And I think John's and Jen's big thing was to sell the beer, get it out, get it into the consumer as quick as possible, because beer like that will degrade over time. And it's, honestly, I still think it's one of the finer beers. Well, I still prefer Focal Banger over Hetty.
And also, what did John say? He said, oh, if, you know, I'm not giving out my recipe. If people like this, they should make it. And then everybody did.
Right, exactly.
Careful what you wish for.
I just remember, like, people early on, like 5 years ago, people were trying to literally take the empty cans or the last eighth of the can, and they were like, I'm going to propagate this yeast in here and try to revive the dead yeast that's in here.
Right.
And if I can get something going. And people were just, you know, that was like, you know, the spark that started the fire with everything. And just people were like, this is so amazing. And just people, and that's also what kind of got people into, like, this is an amazing yeast. And this yeast is what's making the beer so amazing.
That yeast is just Boddington yeast.
Yes, I know, but you can't refute that people were doing that with that. Yeah. And they thought that
but they also don't have a lab. They don't have a lab where they can plate everything out and then find your healthy culture,
yeah,
like your healthy colonies, and then propagate that up.
No, I know, but people thought that. I mean, the yeast is the secret weapon. The yeast
that was the soul of the beer.
Yeah, it is. It is like
water,
you can
water
have,
profile and yeast.
Yeah, and
75% of the beer,
said,
as I learned,
like,
in part one, right?
It's like,
you betcha.
Like what Chris said, it's like you could have 5-10 different types of wort and the same hop profile, but you throw 5-10 different types of yeast into the same wort and hop profile, and you get 5-10 different styles of beer, and that's
amazing.
That's a huge homage to yeast. So I want to say, hey, thank you, yeast. Yeah.
So you are
the backbone of the beer. You are
thank
the
you,
soul.
Yeah.
You are the body of the beer. And like, people think that it's all about the hops. Oh, the hops. Oh, if you don't have the right hops, the beer doesn't taste right. But
ooh,
it's really the yeast.
Wow.
Oh yeah.
The yeast is the world.
You know, today
the yeast is the universe.
The day that we're recording this is St. Patrick's Day Eve.
This is Stone Cold Steve Austin Day.
Okay. Oh, I'd like to add.
Hell yeah.
I'd like to add to, I say today we deem National Yeast Day, so that the day before we overindulge in the beer, we really pay respect to where the beer came from. Is there already a National Yeast Day?
There's got to be.
Oh, Christ. Executive producer. Yeah.
Come on,
he's on it for us.
So
I'm going to smell your fingers.
Just to quickly get back to the
Alex.
Say, one of the things that sort of blew me away about, you know, John's thing was that when I found out that, he said, I'm not giving you, anybody can make this, which they pretty much can.
Sure.
It's beer, right?
Right, right.
And then the other thing was that he would never say what his hops were because he was always using different hops.
Right.
And the fact that he was blending.
Right.
So, you know, it brings us back. You know, here you have what people is, you know, this kind of thing that's been made up. But it's right back to where we are.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's not wild fermentation, but everything else around it is right in the same wheelhouse as wild fermentation. He's making an IPA where he's blending and he's like using whatever ingredients he can get
and he's using hops that, you know, it's like everybody's like, oh, you got to use Citra and you got to use this and you got to use that. It appears to me that he's using whatever he can get his hands on.
Right, whatever probably, you know, whatever was available, whatever is cheap or whatever was
on the
spot.
The spot market.
Right, exactly.
But then that gets back to, you know, that's the brewer's art. He was able to make something that was fantastic out of what he could get his hands on.
Right. Which is, you know, which in my book, I mean, that's a dying thing, right? I mean, you look at the industry today versus what it was, you know,
10 years ago.
10 years ago.
Right.
You know, maybe not even that long, but right. 10 years ago.
I was going to say, even like 5 years
ago. Yeah. Where it used to be, you know, where you did have like the brewer's art, right? Mm-hmm. And I know we're getting off topic here, but, you know, that's just gone now. I mean, you look at breweries, the large majority of breweries that have opened over the last 5 years, it's all just a money grab.
Right.
You know, it's like whatever we can do. You know, and you get all these stupid, kitschy beers of putting.
So there is no National Yeast Day. There is, thanks to executive producer Juan Valdez, there is National Yeast Infection Day, which is. celebrated on the
is that Ritz Carlton's birthday?
27th of October. Is that Ritz Carlton's birthday as well?
No? Unofficially.
Unofficially. So I do deem today the 16th of March.
Yes. Stone Cold Steve Austin
National
Day.
Yeast Day yeast slash. Day. So yes.
Is that lager yeast or ale yeast?
Oh Christ!
Is it?
Now, do they deserve their own day? Right?
Yeah. Do they? Do they deserve their separate days? Lager yeast.
Well, that's
or
a
ale
question
yeast?
For the experts.
Well, it's yeah. It's,
what's
well,
the difference?
The one name. Eats up, one eats down.
Yeah.
How you like that? How you like that?
That's true. One eats up, yeah. One eats down.
Wait, what do you mean? What is that? What are you talking about?
One's top fermenting, one's bottom fermenting.
Okay. One's cold, one's hot.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, anymore? You want any more brain busters?
No, how about I bust out another goat question? Yeah. How you like them?
We haven't had one this hour.
Yeah. How you like that?
So you guys should think about what is the most beautiful, like what is the best experience or best, what's the best experience you guys, you like Jeff and Scott.
Spit it out.
Come on now.
Have seen... In the world of a spontaneous or wild fermentation brewery outside of your own places, you know, what's your favorite place
you've
been
like?
To? Who blew you away?
Jesus.
Wow. Yeah, wow. That was
I didn't know where he was going.
Right? Hibbity, whoa.
Well, I have to bring it back to their wonderful place of Colorado with True Brewery. True Brewing Company.
The Acid Temple.
The Acid Temple. That place was awesome.
Was it the
awesome.
Beer or was it the place?
Both.
It was the experience.
Yeah, the experience.
What is so fantastic about this place for all of us who have no idea what it is?
It's a metal bar.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So all they listen to is death metal and Norwegian black metal.
This sounds like a great time.
The tap room is awesome. The tap room is solid black.
Yep.
And rest in peace to Brandon, who showed us around there. He was definitely a huge asset to that company.
That was a huge bummer.
The nicest guy that, you know, anybody could ever meet. And he was lost too soon.
Yep. Yeah. Way to bring it down.
Yeah. Wow. So at the Acid Temple, they had a little cool ship there, and they had all these fermenters and no glycol hooked up. And as a brewer, you're like, wait, why is there no glycol? It's like, yeah, what's going on?
Why would you have glycol on your fermenters?
What is glycol?
They even had drops. They had drops in there. They had drops. And they had the ports on the back, but they just weren't running glycol.
What is glycol?
It's basically like antifreeze.
Antifreeze.
Oh, okay.
So that's what helps cool your beer down. But when you're making... You know, spontaneous beers and wild fermented beers, you kind of let it free rise. So it kind of goes through all of your different temperature phases during fermentation, so it can bring out different aromas and flavors.
Glycol time for another scream and goat question.
Yeah, where's the goat?
Uh-oh. I got to press the bottom.
Yeah.
Why do goats scream? A, they're hungry. B, they miss their mommy. C, they're in distress. D, all of the above.
All the above.
All the above.
Can I go with the, was it E?
E?
E.
E.
Roller coasters.
Roller coasters. It is all the above. They'll scream for just any old reason whatsoever.
Yep,
they will.
Even
they absolutely
roller
will.
Coasters.
They would.
Sure, even roller coasters. Oh my God!
Nah, goats are great.
How dare you, sir?
Yeah, that's
you're in striking distance right now.
Fighting words right there, buddy.
My goats are adorable.
They are. We have a neighbor with a bunch of goats.
How dare you, sir?
They're very friendly, is what I've come to find out. The goats.
I will lay down a blanket in the nice weather, and my goats will come and lay down with me and. We'll take a little nap during the workday.
When they butt heads, I see a certain level of respect between the goats butting heads.
Pretty cute.
They're like, hey, that was a pretty good one.
Like
you got
button
me.
Heads like that, buttons on there.
Buttons.
Buddy.
Buddy.
Buddy heads.
Yeah. So anyway, that's great. Great job. You know your goats. I think you're 4 for 4.
I love my goats.
On the goats questions, Chris. Fantastic. Get our special guests from Adam Farm and Fermentation. You're going to find these fine people out there in Fonda, New York. Work
near Fonda.
Near Fonda?
In Fonda.
In Fonda. What'd I say?
Peter Fonda.
I said Peter Fonda again?
Jane Fonda.
Jane Fonda.
Wait, now we're going to be found in Jane Fonda?
Yikes.
Wait, I just wanted to clarify.
And I'm excited about this because you clearly know what you're doing. You're passionate about it. And you've moved all the way across the country in order to do it. So, and what a great area out there that you're going to be like a destination for everybody in the 8-county capital district.
Yeah, some cool things about the brewery that we're going to have is, and some of the things that we did at our old brewery, we grew a lot of the ingredients that we put, a lot of the like herbs and stuff that went into our beer, we grew on our property, and now we're going to be doing it on a larger scale. Our waste, you know, if you want to call it that, our spent grains go to our animals. We'll feed those to our goats and our sheep, and we'll have like a little farm store where we'll sell the wool from the animals. So it's going to be like a whole
circle of life
kind of thing out on the farm. So.
Is it just the two of you?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yep.
And we both still work full-time jobs.
Yep. I teach environmental science to kids, and he works a computer job. And so, yeah, it'll just be the two of us. We'll have a whole greenhouse that people can walk through and, you know, just feel and touch and smell the herbs that we grow. And
We're going to be getting into, we're going to be doing cider too. We didn't do cider in Colorado because you weren't allowed, but so we're going to be, we're getting ready to plant an orchard in April. And so we're going to be getting into wild fermented ciders, barrel-aged ciders, all of that
Alex
as well.
Alex is your boy.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Alex is just chomping at the bit to have people to collaborate with and work with.
He's stomping his feet right now.
Until our apples come in, we know some decent people to get apples from.
Yeah, we actually...
I was going to turn you on.
To be able to, you know, to kind of start doing a little bit of playing around and testing, we actually got apples from these guys back in the fall. We went and picked as much as we could at the time, just wild apples. But then we ended up getting apples from these guys and pressing those and starting to play around with, you know, just getting those fermenting to kind of see what yeast character we have in the area and things like doing some test batches. And
that's another thing that we plan on doing is we're going to continue to use the yeast that we grew in or that we cultivated in Colorado. But we're also going to go and grab yeast from our property here and blend the two and hopefully get something even more amazing that we have already had.
We'll blend them eventually, but we're probably going to have like the New York yeast beers. We'll have our Colorado beers and then of course the spontaneous stuff and whatnot. But eventually we want to probably try to marry the two together. And
that's like a huge testament to wild fermentation. It's like, so you could see the difference between just, you know, the microflora that's in the air in New York and the microflora that's in the air in Colorado. Yep. And like, you know, I have, you know, I'm a young guy, but I have a lot to learn from you guys.
Wait, because you're saying we're not young? I mean.
No, I don't have that much. I don't have that many years in the industry.
Fucking flip this table.
You should not have wronged her goats.
Yeah.
But part two over.
Yeah. Right. No. So, are you guys planning on like taking out like petri dishes with different types of media and then putting them around your farm? So, like, say if you're gonna grow blueberries. Where you could put a petri dish there, one by the apples. Mm. Well, definitely one not downwind of the goats.
Honestly, the first time...
get that goaty farm blanket.
Yeah, right? That's where you get the real Britannomyces brexilensis.
The first time we caught, it was super rudimentary the first time we caught. We put mason jars of sugar out around. And we, and another thing that we did is we went out and swabbed, which is something we did in Belgium too. We swabbed everything. When we went to Belgium,
it's very moldy there.
Yeah,
it's very moldy in Belgium.
I was working at White Labs at the time, and I grabbed a bunch of swabs and you know, containers with the corks and all that. And so when we went to Cantillon and when we
just
went, yeah, I did. I was like, and when we were in West Mall and when we were in everywhere, and I was just kind of like, and just sticking it in and, you know, all kinds of stuff. So we did that around our house and just around area. We went on hikes and I grabbed stuff like that too.
Cool.
And then once, you know, I found something that looked good or, you know, or something that smelled good that we agreed on, then I would plate it and then start watching it and see how we went from there.
What's an example of something that you really dug, that really happy you swabbed? Like, oh, I got to swab more of this.
Nothing came from Belgium, just so you know. Our friends, you were asking the question.
Yeah, you guys didn't answer.
The question.
Favorite, like, spontaneous wild.
I would say the most beautiful place, and we've met some really great people and had some amazing experiences at different breweries. And I'm speaking from my own opinion, and I would almost guarantee that he would agree. Antidote. Over in Belgium, we never met him. We talked to him online, or Jeff actually started talking to him, you know, through Facebook, I think it was. And they invited us to the brewery, and we're like, all right, we're going to be there. And they invited us to the home, and they made us pizzas and showed us their little tiny operation, which was even smaller than what we had. And, you know, next thing you know, we're sitting at their table, and we're like, we got to go, you know, and we're eating and drinking and just all of a sudden now we have this beautiful relationship with these folks that are doing, I don't know, similar but different.
Well, that's how we got to know each other, is because their brewery was on their property behind their house, very small, you know, operation. They grew a lot of their own stuff. It's all wild fermentation. And that's how we kind of got together online. And then when we were going over there, I just kind of reached out and said, hey, can we come by? And they weren't even open yet. And they were like, oh, absolutely. And what we thought was going to be a quick, you know, maybe 1-2 hour brewery tour turned into a 7-hour dinner, met the brother and the kids and the dad and, you know, everybody else. And
the goats? Do you mean any goats? They have any goats?
They have Icelandic sheep. Yeah. We have Icelandic sheep now too. So
you move those across country?
We got all of our animals here.
But then
sheep go to heaven, goats go to hell, right? That's the cake song.
But that turned into just a great relationship that we have with them today. And I've flown back over there since and brewed a collaboration beer with them, and it's just turned into a really good relationship. So out of this spontaneous brewing world, that's probably been
spontaneous,
like
friendship.
That goes to show it doesn't
exactly.
You agree?
It doesn't have to be this corporate company or large scale. Like, oh, they're the name, you know, the mainstay in the industry. It's like you guys are great. You guys are cool, and like. Yeah. That's how it is, you know. I feel like that's how it is with us and you guys. Like, we just met you guys, and you guys are such great people that it's just like, you know.
But then if you
want, you guys have a great thing going on.
But then if you want to talk
your
about,
beer, it's amazing.
It but sounds like Alex feels like they're the cool, goat.
If you want to talk about big and cool, though, I would throw props to Avery. I mean, Avery's huge, ginormous, you know, brewery, and they have been nothing but family to us.
I don't even know if we would have got off the ground.
No, without Avery. And they're, you know, one of the biggest breweries in the country, and they have been nothing but family to us. So
we were just hosted by Dogfish Head, and Sam and his wife were fantastic. They're this huge brewery, and they took time out for Indian Ladder Farms.
Right.
Right.
You know,
right.
Which is amazing. I mean, yeah,
everyone's like, who the hell are these guys? Why are they hanging out? Why is he getting his Jeep Gladiator? Why is he playing with his radio?
Yeah. So it's a great industry. Yeah. There are some outliers, as we all know, but the vast majority of people in the industry are fabulous people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Sam, I mean, you know, Sam, I don't know if he's adjusted his numbers in the recent years, but Sam of Dogfish Head, I mean, he told us years ago, he goes, 90% of the brewery is amazing, the other 10% are assholes, and everybody knows who they are. You know?
That's like I said, the outlier.
And, and it's not the brewery staff.
No, it's
the marketing department.
I want to ask you how it seems like it would be have a huge effect on a climate change and fermentation.
Oh,
has,
sure.
I mean, have you seen the effects already?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a huge, huge program going on right now in Belgium. And there's a few breweries here in the U.S. that are participating in it. But there's like all of these... lambic breweries that have been around forever, you know, Cantillon, Oud Beercel, Dre Fontaine, I mean, just all these ones that have been doing this for hundreds of years are now starting to truly look into what is climate change doing to their brewing season, because we didn't really touch on it, but for spontaneous brewing, you need a certain temperature range to put your wort in the cool ship, let it cool. It's seasonal. Yeah, yeah. So it's typically a winter brewing only. You usually want it somewhere between like 35 to maybe 40, low 40s mm-hmm. Fahrenheit. Anything too cold, anything below that, typically you could get into too cold of weather and you're not going to get the yeast, and anything hotter than that, you can get off flavors. So it's a very tight window of temperatures, and of obviously, depending where you're at in the world, a time frame during the winter is when you can do it. Well, with climate change and everything like that, those windows are shrinking.
And so is that beer going to go away, or is...
It's going to be different. It'll
it's going to
be
different for
different.
Sure. And so that's part of the study that they're doing is like, you know, how can we adapt to this? Keep doing what we're doing, and maybe the beer is just different than what it was, or you know, is climate change? I mean, obviously it'll keep changing, but just ultimately, how is it going to affect it, and what can we do with these types of beers in that environment? And that's, you know, that's just starting. I mean, they started it, you know, probably, I don't know, within the last 5 years, really, really digging in and starting to look at it, because it's in Belgium, because that's where all this started. They're seeing it, you know, their brewing seasons are getting cut way down, so it's becoming a very serious issue.
That is. It's fascinating to think about where this is going to go and what's going to come of it as well. Is there any, I always like to try and stay positive, any positive outcome that you maybe wish would come out of a warmer climate, or more intense winds, or more moisture, whatever we might be headed towards.
Different funkiness.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you don't know. I mean, you could come up with a whole new.
Yeah, you're getting so, like, we could be getting some cross stuff that's from Ontario that we've never seen down here, or they're getting stuff from, you know, North Carolina.
Oh, we can be getting stuff from across seas. I mean, there's even stuff that's blowing across oceans that we're starting to see in our country. You know, different seeds, different animals, different things that are pollens that are coming across the ocean, you know, coming across the Atlantic Ocean that we never saw in our country before that are coming.
And it seems like how passionate you guys are and how into this, that would be exciting to me, I think. Like, let's see where this goes.
Oh, for sure. I mean, and a lot of these breweries are starting to look at, you know, originally we always thought that warmer temperatures were, you know, creating off flavors and all of this, and maybe it's just, you know, really maybe it's just creating a different beer. It's not, you know, it wasn't creating the same beer we always thought about or that we knew. Mm-hmm. It's creating a new beer. And so they're looking into, you know, all right, well, what if we do have to do this in warmer temperatures? You know, do we just, does the yeast and the bacteria ultimately adjust and make something new? Or, you know, maybe we have to start looking at process and things like that. So it's, you know, I think it's the unknown. I mean, and that's the big thing with wild fermentation, spontaneous fermentation. Ultimately, at the end, you have no idea what's going to come out the other side. You really don't, especially if you're working in barrel aging and all of that type of stuff. It's embracing the chaos, and you can't control it. All you can do is, you know, once the beer leaves the brew kettle, you've kind of given up control over it, and then you're just along for the ride. And, you know, we'll see
That's where you kiss the hose when it goes to the tank.
You're exactly.
Best of luck. I love you.
Exactly. You know.
Wild, spontaneous.
spontaneous. So it's different. It's always changing.
Right.
Like look at Alex's Cider Worlds. Dry hard is never the same apple, but still the same fermentation quality because of the year or like the time that it's actually picked and pressed.
You know, you're constantly trying to keep it consistent. Mm-hmm. You're taking samples and testing, but it's just like it's with cider. It's just like wine. It's like each vintage is going to be a little bit different. Mm-hmm. Trying to maintain consistency, but it's like, you know, it's not like
you have like the ballpark
a malt
area.
Profile and a hop profile, and it's like it's up to the brewer to keep it consistent. It's the world keeps it a little bit different, and you know, it's
the, Mother Nature doing its thing.
Yeah, I mean,
that's what I love about my side.
Even the most consistent product in the world, like Budweiser. I mean, how many people work for Budweiser that go around the country to all the different breweries to make sure that it tastes mediocre? Right. I mean, it's an army of people, right?
Right, right. It's a huge part of their payroll.
It is, and you know that's a well, it's a testament to science, you know, to be able to create that and make that. But Budweiser from 1950 to today is not the same product.
No, not at all.
It used to be different. I mean, so consistency is, you know.
They're getting all that rice from California.
Well, that's good rice.
You know, the only way we can keep it consistent is by agricultural acts.
That's right. That's right. We're here to educate. Wow. We're here to inspire.
I love how you're holding that microphone stand. Right,
like Steven Tyler.
Right there should be the theme music. Right there.
This is.
Thank you for joining us.
Episode 8 of Agricultural Acts. We're fireside here at Indian Ladder Farms in Altamont, New York. Part 2 with our special guest from Adam Farm and Fermentation out there in Bridget Fonda.
That's Bridget Fonda. Bridget We're getting
Fonda,
younger.
New York. Yeah. really looking forward to enjoying the products.
Type in Bridget Fonda on their Google Maps.
Well, she made some good movies.
I can't control what people do.
Barbarella?
Look, once Dieter told me that those Fondas actually have ties to that area, I'm not going to let it go now.
No.
I'm not going to let it go. It's like Avril
Lavigne.
They do. Yeah, just like you have a 750-foot pond in your backyard.
He does.
I do.
I think that was only a deep tale that he told me. Yeah, that the pond was 750 feet deep.
The entire EQX listening audience.
I always forget these microphones are connected to something. Damn it. Scott, I want to talk about, does this sippy cups and coloring books have anything to do with anything we've been talking about? This is delicious.
So, it's marketed to children.
Okay,
no,
great.
No. So this is not something that's done in barrels or something that's done in the cool ship. This is known as a kettle sour. It's a clean sour beer. So I take a pitch of lactobacillus. So instead of using like your typical Saccharomyces yeast where it turns sugars into alcohol, it turns sugars into lactic acid. It's your lactic acid bacteria. So you get your pH drop and then you can finish it off with regular old Saccharomyces cerevisiae to get your alcohol content. And this is just heavily fruited. And we are going back to being hype breweries and try to make that money. This is what the kids want. Like, I want to be making, you know, mixed fermentation beers left and right, but once again, that's not going to pay the bills,
right.
Unfortunately.
This speeds up the process.
Yes. So I can make a sour beer doing it this way in about 2 weeks, opposed to something like that went up to 13 months.
It is also quite expensive, just so you know, to make. It's fast, but it is expensive.
The profit margin on this particular beer is...
On this sippy cups and coloring books.
Yeah, they're...
Yeah, to buy a pitch of lactobacillus to make a...
Not to mention the fruit puree.
Well, yeah, the fruit... I mean, the fruit alone, but to buy the pitch to make the kettle sour is a very expensive way to make a sour beer.
Okay.
Where a traditional sour takes time... It's expensive in time and commitment. A kettle sour is expensive monetarily because it's just an expensive pitch of.
This guy's eating yep. yogurt.
Yeah. So. Oh yeah. So well, that's another thing. It's like, yeah, use
Good belly.
Yeah. Use good belly. I've been using good belly. I've used kefir. This is actually done with kefir.
But it's still not they're, cheap. It's
no.
Not,
like no. It's like cheap. It's like a.
For, financially, there's no shortcut.
For
doing real estate or
for doing product. Something like this on a 3-barrel batch, my quote unquote yeast pitch would be like $8 at the local Hannaford. It's just full of lactobacillus plantarum.
It's just a faster ROI.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like I'll still drop my pH to about 4.2 pre-sour and then bubble it with CO2 the whole time. Put a blanket. Of CO2 on there, throw that in there, seal up the kettle. 3 days. Ooh, it's like, yeah, that brewery smells funky. And the best is when you start heating up the kettle and you get to about 140, 150, and that lactose starts to die.
Yeah.
Just gets so foamy and oh.
But that's
there's a lot of soul searching that must go into putting out a product or developing the product, because it's like, do you want to be true to what just you like? But you also have to be a business person and put something out that is semi-mass marketable.
But I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to say the Larry David quote. I'll let Dieter say that.
Well, no, it's fun to try these things.
Yeah, I mean,
sometimes you just
want to
have fun.
Right, you know.
Yeah, right, exactly. You don't want to overthink it a lot of times, you know.
The
like,
other thing is, okay, yeah, we spent some money up front, but it didn't take very long to make it. Does the public like it? If they don't like it, you know, we won't make it again.
It's
you know?
Sippy cups and coloring books.
Was it fun? Do I kind of like it? Yeah. Do I want to drink it every day? No.
No, right, exactly.
You know, it's... But do I want to drink any beer every day? It's like people come in and look at the board. It's like, oh, what's your favorite beer up there? And I was like, I don't know. Is it Tuesday?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, maybe I want hops today. Maybe I don't. Yeah, you know?
Maybe I just want to drink a double bock. Yeah, have a Pilsner or a Kolsch beer.
It's not up there because it's made by another brewery.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I like other breweries' beers. I like our beers.
Do you? So someone comes in. Right off the street right here, completely unfamiliar with Indian Ladder Farms, Cidery and Brewery, when they eventually come out to Adam Farm and Fermentation, they say, what should I try? What do you go with here? What do you start someone at? Do you start a conversation with them about, do you normally...
It has to be a conversation. I think a lot of people are like... There's a lot of kind of arrogance out there. It's like, well, I don't know what you like. And it's like, well, now talk to your customer. You know, find out what they like, you know, and then... And then the other thing is try to educate them, right? You know, if they say, well, I only drink this, it's like, well, maybe, you know, we can lead them down to another beer, you know? And
so someone comes in here and you ask them that question, they say, well, I'm a Bud Light guy.
Then we have like 74 Cutador.
Yeah.
Or we have Indian Lager Farms. We make beers that, you know, are not too crazy for the inexperienced beer drinker. Even for the experienced beer drinkers, they like them. Mm-hmm.
I like the pompous beer drinker that comes in who takes femininity for granted and says he likes a lager and then tells me his favorite ale.
Those are the best.
That is always my favorite.
No, I don't drink ales. I only drink stout.
Right. Yeah, no, I like, you know, I love the guy who comes in and sees a woman behind the bar and thinks he is the beer god and then says he loves, you know, lagers. And I'm like, oh, great. What lager do you like? And then he gives me the name of an ale. And I'm like, okay. And then we go from there.
I like the people who say, I don't like hoppy beers. And then I get them to drink the hoppiest beer they've ever had in their entire life and tell me how great it is.
Right. Yeah. You know,
it's not that hoppy. Yeah.
You know, sir, you're actually drinking a cider.
We have had that.
That is out of the water tap. The sad part about it, though, is that the whole realm of educating the consumer is really becoming a dying thing in this industry.
And
I say that because I actually just got into this, we'll call it a discussion, a couple of weeks ago with some brewery owners that, you know, have been in the business for, you know, the last couple of years. I got into this whole thing about educating their consumers, and they just said flat out, they just came out flat right and said, that's just pretentious. Why would you, you know, why would you try to educate your consumers into something that you like or whatever? They call that pretentious, and then essentially said, you know, who has that kind of time? And
you do, because you run a business.
Exactly. And that was my whole argument.
That's your job.
You know, but then that shows you the people who got into this industry because they love what's the industry's about, or the ones that got into it within the last 5 years because it was the cool thing to do and they thought it was a good way to make, or an easy, quick way to make money. Yeah. You know, and that's we're getting off into a tangent here, but that's what's kind of causing the industry to implode on itself right now.
If I can convince somebody to drink a sour beer that told me that they hate sour beer,
it's my favorite thing to do.
And I can convince them, or if I can convince somebody to drink a super hoppy beer, you know, because they're all too bitter. I was like, well, I can give you a beer right now that has more hops than you've ever had in your goddamn life, and it's not bitter.
Right, right. So, I can't even begin to tell you how many times I've come across people that just tell me outright that they don't like beer, and then, you know, a half an hour later they're drinking, you know, Arlo or something like that, and they're just like, "This is beer? Holy shit!"
This is because a perfect in their example. Mind,
all they're thinking about is, you know, they had a sip of somebody's Bud Light or Busch or Coors or something like that. And that is their perception of beer, where we just sat here and had, you know, however many beers or, you know, different types of beers.
A lot of sour beers too.
I would say a large majority of people out there would be blown away that these are even beers.
Right.
You know, because they have this, you know, preconceived notion of what beer is.
Absolutely.
You know, and so many of these beers are actually closer to like wine characters than they are beer characters. And you can, you know, I don't know how many wine drinkers I've been told, you know, I don't drink beer, and you give them a glass of a wild fermented beer and they're just like, this is like the greatest, you know, white wine I've ever had.
What wine is this?
Chris, I was one of those converts. Sours, forget about it. It turns out I was just having the wrong sours.
Or even if you get someone who's, you know, they're diehard Bud Light, Miller, someone like that, and they came into a craft brewery with their friends, you know, just because they're out for the day, and they're like, oh, I only drink Bud Light, or I only drink Miller Light, or whatever, and they're like, that's it. And then you find something on the menu and that they enjoy, and they're like, oh my gosh, I didn't think I liked craft beer, and now they're hooked. Now his best friend is one of those people, you know. He only likes certain beers. It's a true story. His best friend
Mick Ultra
was a Mick Ultra guy. And we brought
Sorry.
We
Look, went I said that out loud.
We went no, it's fine. We went for a visit and we went to the store and we bought a smorgasbord of beers. And by the end of the trip, now he's...
Well, then we took him Arlo.
Well, yeah, but then we took, you know... But then we went to the store and we bought some smorgasbords of beers. And by the end, now he always has craft beer in his fridge, even when we're not there. He's got craft beer in his fridge.
I firmly believe that we still have to be evangelists.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I mean, this whole thing, you know, what you're saying, you're sitting down with these other brewers and they're saying, oh, well, that's pretentious and so on. It's... At the end of the day, you're a business. You have to be an evangelist to sell your product. And you can't just be a bunch of brewers sitting around talking inside baseball.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, this is what we like, and I don't care what they like. You know,
is that what you meant when you said the industry's imploding in on itself, Jeff? Is that?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah. You've got this new batch of brewery owners and brewers that got into this for... You know, because it was the hot industry to get into, you know, and they thought it was the easy money grab and whatnot. And then all of a sudden they're realizing that it's like an actual business, and it takes, you know, creativity to keep people coming in. And, you know, we could go down a whole other realm about how that creativity, quote unquote, has, you know, started creating a lot of things that aren't beer, that, you know, or wouldn't be considered as beer. But but they have this,
it's pretty.
Yeah, right, it's pretty. But they're not taking the time to, they don't see any benefit in educating their consumers, you know. And to sit there and hear, to have a brewer tell me that, you know, it's pretentious and they don't have the time to do it, I just kind of sat back and shook my head, and I'm like, I don't even know how you begin to argue with that. Like, how do you reason with that when they've got that already in their head that they're just here to keep shoving beer in front of people?
On a busy day here, I could nine out of 10 people that walk in the door, I could say, what's IPA? And they don't know. Why should they?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it my job to to convince them why they might like it?
Maybe
they won't, but...
I don't like hoppy beers, but can I have an IPA?
Yeah.
Do you have a double IPA? Yeah.
Well, the thing is, you may find that they like sours or cider.
Right.
Yeah. That they don't.
Hell, they might not even know that they like sours or cider.
Well, maybe Mick Ultra wasn't their go-to after
all. The whole conversation started over about educating somebody over kettle sours versus traditional sours, and I'm of course on the traditional sour way, and they were just like, well, why does it matter? It's sour. And it's like,
of course it matters.
You lose all the complexity of.
But they're not asking that question because they're trying to start an argument with you. They're honestly just, what's the difference? Because to your average consumer,
he's talking about people that are educated in that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about the brewers.
Okay.
They know
that. Yeah, he's not talking about the consumer.
Well, yeah. F them.
Right. And
as long as they keep buying, man.
They're making some friends today.
I was trying to make the argument that there's a massive difference between kettle sours and traditional sours, both from depth of character to the amount of work that goes into it and all those types of things. Now you don't have to sit there and bore your consumer to death about these are all the differences, but you should at least let them know that this is how we made this beer, and this is what's known in the industry as a kettle sour, and this is why, or something like that.
Yeah,
you put a kettle sour and like a spontaneous fermented beer, you put those two 5-ounce samples in front of somebody,
they'll know they're different.
And they'll make the choice.
Make the choice, and they may know they're different, but why?
Well, they're two totally different beers.
One's super clean, and then the other one's funky. And
which one are they choosing?
Yeah, but so many times I've had a kettle sour, and it's not sour.
Well, yeah.
It's just lacking.
It's heavily
fruited. I guess it's also my upbringing, where I've come from. But it's like, it's just, sometimes the kettle sour just seems like,
that's a whole other.
Yeah.
That's a whole other podcast, right? Is about kettle sours versus traditional sours.
Oh, God bless you. I think this is the last screaming goat question in the Screaming Goats pocket guide here.
I bought that.
How many stomachs? That's Meg. Meg bought this.
I know the answer.
How many stomachs do goats have? Four.
They're a ruminant.
Well.
Damn. Well, on that bombshell, thank you for all our listeners.
Okay. Follow-up question. Do they have upper or lower teeth?
They have both.
Goats do?
Yes. Because I've been bitten.
Not in my goat guide. I don't know if they have upper or lower teeth. I would assume they have both.
Most important is who bought that. It was me, Megan, and I got that for Lori as a gift. It's epic. Everyone should have one.
Well, I think that about wraps things up for part number two, episode 7. Chris and Jeff, absolutely fantastic. You learned so much.
Yeah, thank you guys for coming out.
We're going to have you.
Much appreciated, and you guys are a wealth of knowledge.
We have Indian Ladder Farms on the radio station every other Thursday. We absolutely have to have them pop in, at least for a little bit, especially when you get up and running. We're very excited for you. We can't wait to come out and support you in Fonda, New York. These people, you've listened to the two episodes with them. You know your stuff. You're passionate about it, and I feel like people that listen to this podcast are going to be out there to support you in droves. So we look forward to that. Adam Farm and Fermentation. As always, Indian Ladder Farms, Dieter, Scott, Alex, thank you so much for spending your time and sharing your knowledge. And this guy, the executive producer over here, Juan Valdez. Couldn't do it without him.
He's got coffee.
How y'all doing?
You've been listening to Indian Ladder Farms Cidery and Brewery, owner-operator Dieter Gehring. It's head brewer Scott Veltman, and it's head cider maker Alex Gill. The producers and engineers are Troy Pohl and Ian Carlton. Any questions, comments, thoughts, or suggestions can be directed to podcastilf@gmail.com. That's podcastilf@gmail.com. I'm Jeff Morad. Thanks for listening. See ya!